Poorly Read.
Hello, welcome to episode one of Poorly Read.
This is the podcast where we go through your favourite book series and have hilarious commentary about all the unusual and amazing things that happen in them.
Indeed. The first series we're doing is the Harry Potter series, of course, everyone's favourite fantasy fiction series.
Yes, I'm Gifton.
And I'm Tom.
And we're your marvellous hosts.
Yes.
Please love us as much as we love ourselves. so we hope that you enjoy it. And let's get going. Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone.
Chapter one, then, The Boy Who Lived. This is essentially a chapter of sort of two parts, really. There's the first part, which is Uncle Vernon goes to work.
Yes.
And just is a horrible bastard to everyone around him.
I do quite like the way this chapter actually starts, because it starts with
Mr. and Mrs. Dursley of number 4 Privet Drive.
They were perfectly normal, thank you very much. And I did think that was, as first sentences go, I thought that was actually quite...
Paints a picture of the Dursley's house, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's sort of... I feel like that just gives you everything you need to know about the Dursleys in one sentence. And I was like, yeah, it's pretty swish. I appreciate that. We start off with Vernon going to work. So Vernon works, he's the head of a drill company, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes to work and keeps on seeing unusual people on his journey and unusual like sightings, like a cat at the end of his road.
Reading a map.
For what reason, we don't know. It turns out this cat has magic.
Yeah, and is also a woman who later in the chapter whinges about wizards not being careful enough in front of muggles.
Yeah, she's fucking sitting there with like a fag in her mouth, a pair of glasses on, reads in a map.
Oh, you might have extrapolated a little bit.
Sitting there, fag in one hand, martini in the other, pair of glasses on.
As a cat,
you know, little pair of shoes on, maybe a woolly jumper. Cat in a woolly jumper would be quite sweet, I think.
Yeah, I mean, redundant, but...
I mean, hey, baby, it's cold outside.
July, actually.
That's so true. Alas, earwax.
grumble.
So Vernon arrives at work.
Yeah, and generally shouts at people.
Sees a ton of owls fly past his window.
Well, he would have if he didn't have his back to the window.
That's true. He didn't see the owls. I take that back.
But he runs into some weird people out and about, people in cloaks. He grumbles about. He doesn't like anything out of the ordinary.
He doesn't like hipsters.
No.
He would hate Hackney right now.
Yeah.
I'm sure he hated Hackney back then.
Probably.
He overhears at some point someone, two unusual looking people mention the Potters.
Yeah.
And mention Harry. And this is peculiar to him because he happens to know someone called Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Or he thinks he does.
So something that's mentioned a little bit earlier is that the Dursleys have a big secret. Big secret that they're terrified anyone might find out about.
Yeah, they have key parties.
And we don't know that Dudley is Vernon's.
I mean, Dudley is Chinese after all, so... no, he's not, guys.
No. I don't quite understand why it's written in a way that this is like something they have anxiety about every day. Like it's this huge secret that they have. It's like, wouldn't you just sort of forget about it?
I think it's the fear that like one of the wizarding family might show up on the doorstep or might need help or might show up looking weird or just anything that might bring unwanted attention to them, I think.
Yeah.
Is the deal. And I think... If it was like a distant cousin, I think they it would be forgotten about. But because it's her sister, it's a bit weird. So it turns out that Vernon's wife, her sister, is a witch. And she has a wizard husband. And the Dursleys have tried to distance themselves from that as much as they can. So the mention of...
But how did... everyone knows. I don't think we're in danger of, like, spoiling anything for anyone.
Yeah, if you're listening to this and you haven't read the books, then first of all, like, what kind of monster are you? But secondly, like, literally, we're going to be spoiling, like, book seven stuff from the very off. So don't listen to this if you've not read the books.
I can't imagine why anyone would.
What?
Listen to a podcast about Harry Potter if they, like, don't know the story.
I mean, maybe they just really want to, you know, listen to friends talk. Because when you listen to friends talk, it's like you have friends yourself.
There are better podcasts for that.
Don't say that. We're trying to get an audience.
We are not friends.
We're enemies, and that's why this works. Yeah. yeah. What?
What?
Guys, this is really unprofessional.
Yeah.
No, you were saying, why would it be a thing?
Why does Vernon believe?
So because this was one of my notes as well, actually, and from what I can remember, I did read something on Pottermore about this a long time ago.
Just to be clear, my question was, why does Vernon believe that magic is a real thing? He knows that Petunia's sister is a witch and that their family are magical. As far as we know, he's lived his life completely separate of that. He's just kind of taken Petunia at her word and married her anyway.
Well, no, as from what I can remember, Petunia was just like really unexpectedly good in bed. And he was like, damn, that was the most magicous pussy I ever did have.
No. That's on Pottermore, is it?
That's on Pottermore. JK had a spliff one night and she was like, this is exactly what happened, guys. Post.
Yeah.
No, so they all went out for dinner one time because obviously Petunia wanted to introduce Vernon to her sister. And from what I can remember, she had told him that they were witches and wizards beforehand, but he sort of like took that with like a pinch of salt, not thinking it was a thing. But when they went out for dinner, I think one of them, one of either James or Lily, did some magic to show him, and he was like, oh my god. And like after that, the dinner went horribly, and after that Petunia and Vernon both sort of agreed that they didn't want anything to do with that side of the family anymore. So he didn't believe it at first, but I believe he got showed something, and that's why he believes. I mean, yes, yeah, it is quite for people who are so normal to, because I would imagine, I would have thought he was the kind of guy who, even if he did see something, would be like, would just sort of try and rationalize it afterwards and still wouldn't believe it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I would, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on what James showed me, I guess. I mean, if he whipped that dick out.
Which one did he use? So that's the level of humor you can expect.
Yeah, guys, it's not going to get better than this. So if you want to turn off now, we do forgive you. We give you your money back.
Are we charging for this?
I mean, why not? So anyway, yeah, he goes back home and I think the cat is still there. And he says to Petunia, he mentions that he asked Petunia what her nephew's name was, and she can't quite remember.
No, he can't quite remember. He hears a mention of Harry out in the street, and he's like, I'm not... And he goes to call her from work, and he's like, oh, it might not even be him. He's called a Harold or Henry or something. And he goes
That's
back...
It, yeah.
When he gets home, he asks Petunia, and she says, Harry. It's a nasty common name.
They go to bed thinking that that slightly eerie day... It's just a thing of the past. Yeah, that's when weird shit starts happening.
Yeah, and then camera pans from Dursley's bedroom to street outside. And there's a stiff cat. This is what I've written down.
A stiff cat. Well, she is, yeah, she's got great posture.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's sitting there and all the lights start to go out.
Yep.
And then a man who's dressed like a wanker and got a really long beard appears, and he says something like, fancy seeing you here, Minerva.
Yeah, and then she said, and then Professor McGonagall poofs back into her. The cat is Professor McGonagall, by the way, just in case.
I love how we never do this much explanation for any other episode.
No. Just explaining the absolute basics of chapter one. The cat poofs back into Professor McGonagall and she says, how did you know it was me?
Yeah.
What?
And, like, what does he say? Like, oh, I've never seen a cat look that stiff before or something.
Also, that's your animal form that I've probably seen hundreds of times before.
Yeah, you turn into that every time we fuck. Like. Also, she has, like, the markings of spectacles on her face in her fur.
Yeah.
He's a fucking wizard. Oh, she's just being an idiot.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the whole Animagus mechanics hadn't been fully worked out yet.
I mean, for sure.
Because how did you know it was me is a ridiculous question, given what we know about Animagus's.
Yeah, he's definitely seen that before. Yeah. Seen her before. Anyway, so, yeah, he says that. so she says, like, you took ages getting here or something. And he's like, yeah, I had a few parties I had to stop in on the way here.
I think he just says, I passed by several parties on the way here. I'm surprised you're not celebrating, Minerva. I passed by several parties on the way here, or something like that.
Yeah, why did he pass by? He shouldn't have been fucking partying at all. This is the kind of shit we can expect to see off of Dumbledore for the rest of the series. Really important task. No, I'll stop by my mate's house first.
Why did he not just apparate? I mean, he did apparate in order to appear on Privet Drive, we assume.
I mean, he apparated to all of the parties before he got there.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why he's like... He says that shit to Minerva because he's fucking hammered. So he's like, she's like, how did you know it was me? He's like, I don't know, I didn't.
This is stiff pussy.
And she's like, I don't find that kind of humour funny, Dumbledore.
And he's like, sherbet lemon?
Yeah, fucking have a suck on this, you silly bitch. She's like, Dumbledore! And he's like, Snape. She's like, what? He's like, oh, I don't know.
It's a puppet show I saw once.
Yeah, a puppet show I saw once. I don't even go here. Yeah, so she basically tells him that she's been keeping an eye on these muggles all day.
Yeah.
And she says, like, are you sure that you want to, like, do this? Because these are the worst kinds of muggles.
Because she doesn't know that Dumbledore's planning on putting Harry here. Because they have the whole revelation of, oh, I hear Lily and James are dead, and Dumbledore confirms it, and it's all very sad. And then she says, what about the boy? And Dumbledore basically says he's going to come and live here, and Minerva's like, what?
But these are the worst kinds of muggles, Dumbledore.
That was
so shockingly bad. I apologise. I take it back. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like she's shocked by that, so she doesn't know why she's there, why they've met there.
I mean, that is literally what Dumbledore does all the time.
Just gives mysterious cryptic information.
Just blindly follow it.
Yeah.
Because they're like, he's tall, he's old, he's white. He must be right. but yeah, because she goes, yeah, these are the worst kinds of muggles. Like, don't you think he'd be better off with us? Like, there's not a person in the Wizarding World, there's not a child in the Wizarding World who's not going to know his name. And Dumbledore's like, and that's precisely why we must leave him here. Something, something, something. So basically Dumbledore wants to leave this boy here with the Dursleys because this boy is going to be very, very famous, and he doesn't want this boy to grow up with that on his head.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that is that. I mean, yeah, it makes sense.
Probably, like, is the reason, even though he's going to come to Hogwarts aged 11 and have it all sprung on him at once.
Basically, what has been happening is that the Dark Lord has been having, like, a tyrannical reign over the Wizarding World for a couple of years now. And he tried to attack the Potters, and upon attacking the Potter's child, Harry, somehow the curse rebounded and he died.
Yeah.
With quotation marks around that. But Harry survived, but not his parents.
Just in case anyone
has never ever read the books or seen the films or watched Oprah's interview with J.K. Rowling.
And is somehow inexplicably listening to this podcast.
I mean, you know, you might just be curious. I'm not wrong. So Dumbledore's plan then is basically to leave Harry with his only remaining relatives because he doesn't want him to grow up in a world where he's the most, like, famous wizard around, really, for stopping the Dark Lord, which I guess makes sense. So not long after he says all this, we hear, like, a rumble in the sky.
Yeah, and pretty much a full night and day after...
Yes.
after Voldemort has been to the house and done his evil deed, Hagrid, Harry's finally collected from the wreckage and brought to...
Yeah, so this screaming baby was left next to his dead mother's body for a whole day before what we come to know as Hagrid... Notice I say what, not who, we come to know as Hagrid, collects him from the wreckage and brings him to Privet Drive. I'm like, WTF?
I mean, Hagrid does the best he can.
It's not Hagrid's fault, it's Dumbledore's fault.
Why was he tasked with this? one of the only people Dumbledore knows who can't apparate.
There's literally no good reason why Minerva or Dumbledore couldn't have gone to the wreckage straight away.
No.
Because, like, they would have found out within a couple of hours, because it was quite a big explosion after the spell backfired. It blew a hole in the ceiling. So people in the town would have noticed and reported it. So the wizards would have found out. And there were celebrations, like, literally all day because the Dark Lord was finally gone. So everyone fucking knew.
Yeah.
What happened to the fucking baby?
He was just sitting in the house.
Yeah, because Hagrid goes, yeah, he fell asleep as I was flying over Bristol. He wasn't anywhere before that because Hagrid is using Sirius Black's bike to fly Harry there.
Yeah, so which Dumbledore didn't know about. Hagrid tells him
in this chapter,
I had to borrow this bike off Sirius Black. So Dumbledore didn't give Hagrid a means of transportation.
Yeah, I mean, Dumbledore's like, Hagrid, just take first grade Western.
Yeah.
Yes, I thought that was shocking. That poor baby.
Yeah.
How did he get fed? Maybe Hagrid, like, breastfed him on the way over.
Oh, God.
I mean, he's been like, you've been lactating since the age of 4. It's all right, Harry. Some good old Somerset milk here.
Oh, God. I reckon that milk is alcoholic.
Alcoholic and fucking curdled.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like cream cheese.
Oh, God, that's so disgusting. Oh, that's making me cringe. Ugh. So, yeah, he arrives with the baby. So then there is some more discussion. And then, like, Minerva says, like, are you sure this is the right thing to do or something?
Yeah, I mean, she's skeptical about whether it's a good idea to leave Harry with these muggles. Rightly skeptical, I think. Because they're horrible people.
They're the worst. And then Dumbledore... Okay, he says something nice, and then he leaves this baby on the doorstep of the house with a note just explaining everything. And then he fucks off. And I'm like, you're such a knob, Dumbledore. He just can't wait to get to the next fucking party that he was, like, scheduled to go to.
No, I know. And, like, something that he says in this, when they see the scar, the lightning-shaped scar on Harry's forehead, McGonagall says, is there nothing you can do about that, Dumbledore? And he says, I'm afraid not. Even if there was, I wouldn't. Scars can be handy sometimes. I have a scar underneath my right knee that's a perfect map of the London Underground. Firstly, I call bullshit. There's no fucking way. And I... What? How is that handy for him?
I think what he meant to say is, no, I wouldn't even if I could. I mean, I bought some bubblegum once and got a transfer tattoo that's a perfect map of the London Underground. I haven't washed since.
Yeah.
For those of you who were in London in the 90s, bubblegum with, like, transfer tattoos was, like, the creme de la creme of sweets.
I remember it.
Yeah.
It wasn't just in London.
Oh, I didn't know there were places outside of London.
It's all green fields.
It's all just green fields and races. So, yeah, like, yeah, he wouldn't have that scar. That's the kind of shit he would say, knowing that it's not true, just to impress people.
It doesn't make any fucking sense. It's the kind of thing that just sort of nice little quirky, whimsical things that add a bit of flavour, but given what we now know about the larger wizarding world that's been created, make no fucking sense at all. And I feel like, you know, someone, either she must have noticed or, like, an editor must have been like, now this little bit doesn't make sense. But I think we should keep it in just because it's a nice quirky little bit of colour for the character.
I think the editor was probably like, look, I hope this book sells, but there's probably not going to be a second one.
Yeah.
So let's let her do whatever she wants. You know, J.K. Rowling was not in a good place when she was writing this first one, so...
Was she not?
Do you not know, like, the history of her?
Vaguely. Is it funny?
I mean, as much as, like, poverty and welfare can be.
Continue.
Continue while I unzip. So basically, prior to this, she was working in Portugal as an English teacher, and she was married, and the marriage fell apart, and she moved to Scotland, I believe, and she had her child, because her sister lived in Scotland, but basically she was unemployed, and she couldn't afford childcare for her daughter, and so she was just sort of in between, like, a rock and a hard place, and so she was as poor as she could be without being homeless. And the only reason she wasn't homeless was because she had a daughter, so she got a council flat because of that. And so all she had really was, she had this idea for this book, and she was, like, massively depressed, and it was the only thing that kept her going. So, like, literally in, like, her darkest times, she was just writing this book as a way to keep herself, like, mentally afloat. And that's why it's sort of quite, like, a magical story. it really is like a Cinderella story for her, because she did not have a pot to piss in. Now she has many pots to piss in.
She does.
Gold pots to piss in.
Like.
So yeah, he leaves the baby on the doorstep like any responsible adult would do, and includes a letter that explains everything to Petunia. Then they all fuck off. Then in the morning, Petunia opens the door to get the milk out and screams, quite rightly, because there's a baby there that has not been abducted in the night. So we get on to chapter two. What is the title for chapter two? I've forgotten.
The Vanishing Glass.
The Vanishing Glass. So we skip forward, not 11 years, 10 years, I think. And we see what has become of this little baby boy. So turns out Harry has grown into a very thin boy who lives in the cupboard under the stairs at the Dursleys, where all... where everyone who has a happy childhood is kept.
Yeah.
He hasn't even really got enough room to, like, lay straight out in. He's got to, like, bend his knees in.
No, and it's actually pretty horrendous when you think about
it. Yeah, for real, real. So the Dursleys have another child called Dudley, who's the same age as Harry.
Who has... two bedrooms.
Yes.
It's not like they don't have another room to put Harry in. And they've got their bedroom,
yeah,
a guest bedroom, and Dudley's first bedroom, Dudley's second bedroom.
Yeah.
And they put Harry in the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
And it's all done in this, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but it's all done in this little, almost kind of cute nursery rhyme kind of way, like the boy who lived in the cupboard under the stairs.
Yeah.
But then when someone... when they think someone's found out that they're keeping him in the cupboard, they shit themselves and think, shit. It's like they know they're doing a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And they get him out and put him in a bedroom.
So, yeah, the day is Dudley's birthday.
Yes.
And Dudley gets presented with, like, a load of presents. And I think he gets 36 presents, and that's one less than last year.
Yeah, he throws a hissy fit about it. Yeah, and then his parents get all flappy and say, oh, we'll buy you some more, lovely.
Yeah, we'll buy you some more when we're out today, because today they're going to the zoo.
Mm.
Now, Harry, despite what is quite obvious, a horrendous life, is quite, like, a plucky kid, I'd say.
He is. That was the word I was going to use as well. He's still... just sort of like pipes up with stuff.
Yeah.
And just, he isn't completely broken, which, given that from the age of one, he's been like just completely oppressed and like just in every way, just everything he's ever tried to do or say, just immediately shut down, put in this cupboard to live. But he's still just like, oh, I had a dream about a motorbike.
Yeah. Yeah. So he brings up the motorbike. And they all get, like, really, like, angry about it and stuff.
Yeah, and then he's like, yeah, it's just a dream. He's so calm and normal about it.
I get the feeling that he probably sleeps a lot, because dreams are his only escape from the horrendous reality that he has to endure.
That's so dark.
Yeah, so I reckon he probably, like, sneaks into Petunia's medicine cabinet and, like, you know, just takes her, like, Valium, breaks into the whiskey cabinet,
yeah,
down some of that, lays down, has, like, a 10-hour power nap.
Yeah, these are the parts of Harry's upbringing that we don't get fully explored.
Yeah, that we don't get to in the books.
But we can only imagine... are there, because otherwise what is he spending his time doing in that cupboard?
I imagine he must do sort of like sneaky shit like that a lot that's not mentioned in the book, that does keep his sanity.
Yeah,
you know,
TV.
Yeah,
because he's not getting any exposure to the outside world. School is not normal for him.
Yeah, so he has a really shitty school life too. Like, he hasn't really got any friends at school as far as we know, and he gets bullied by Dudley and Dudley's friends.
Yeah, and I just, how is this kid not broken?
At night time, he probably goes into the living room, turns on TV. This is like 91, and so I reckon the Dursleys would have been one of the few families in England that would have had, like, yeah, satellite TV. So
they know. I think they might have been like, oh, this modern nonsense.
No way. I reckon Vernon was like... because having the big satellite dish outside your house so your neighbours knew that you had...
Yeah.
That, I mean, he would very much be that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So I reckon Harry would go in there, you know, pot on, like, one of, like, the adult channels.
For sure. I mean, I would have if I had Sky in the 90s.
I remember I did. Like, we had cable. I remember there used to be this channel that... anyway, we're getting off topic. So...
Is that where you discovered things about yourself?
Yeah. Alas, earwax. Yeah, so Harry is very thin and he wears clothes that are Dudley's hand-me-downs. And because Dudley's very large, the hand-me-downs are very large too. And so he obviously goes to school looking malnourished and in clothes that obviously don't fit him. And I did think, how is child abuse not noticed by the school? Because things like that are picked up on. And so I'm wondering why the teachers didn't take him aside and ask if everything was okay at home, ask him about what the situation's like. Because if he had told them what it was like exactly, he would have been rehomed, I think.
Yeah.
So, and his whole life could have been better. But I mean, I don't know. It's a very, I guess it wouldn't really work for the book.
Yeah, that's just an overarching theme, isn't it?
It wouldn't work for the book.
Yeah. Why doesn't this perfectly logical thing happen? Well, because otherwise there just wouldn't be a book.
Yeah, there wouldn't be a book, bitch. Okay, I'm sorry for asking, Joanne.
That is your real name.
That is your real name, you lizard woman, you.
I didn't fully realise what you'd said then.
A point I did have is that I think that the hatred of Harry came when he first started exhibiting magic a bit later on. They do say that they tried to squash the magic out of Harry because they wanted him to be normal. So I reckon that in the very early days that they treated him quite nicely. And then when he started doing accidental magic, I think that's when the hate started. Because they sort of did these awful things to try and like crush his spirit so much that the magic died with it.
Yeah, so maybe he did have a normal childhood for the first sort of 6 years of his life. But then did he have a bedroom, and did they then take him out of the bedroom and put him in the cupboard?
I mean, it's a question, isn't it? I mean, maybe he did like magic things from like as young as 3 years old.
Yeah, maybe. I mean...
Maybe he was like levitating shit and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean... That's what babies do, right? Sure. Yeah, sure.
I mean, I don't have children, but I've heard they levitate stuff all the time.
Yeah, well, I have five and they all do that. So, I don't. It's Dudley's birthday, so they're going to the zoo, and Mrs. Fig, who is the usual babysitter for Harry, can't babysit him today.
She's broken her leg.
She's broken her leg, probably tripping over one of her many cats.
Mm.
And so... The Dursleys don't know what to do. They're like, should we leave Harry here? And Vernon's like, no, I don't think so. He'll do all kinds of shit in the house.
Harry suggests they take him with him to the zoo. And Vernon's like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, and then Petunia's like, no, we can leave him in the car. And he's like, I don't think so. I've just got it re-upholstered. I've just removed all the jizz stains from the leather.
You know it's a BMW.
Oh, so is.
Yeah.
But maybe he's saved up enough to buy a Rolls Royce at this point. I feel like that's his life goal, to buy a Rolls Royce. Actually, probably. No, it can't be, because he gets a new car in one of the other books and you wouldn't, like, upgrade from a Rolls Royce, would you? Like, what? Like, where'd you go to?
No, I suppose not. Yeah. I mean, he is a director of a, what, for all we know, is a large drill company. I mean, they have a...
Quite a modest house.
A four-bedroom house in Surrey.
I think that's pretty normal, though, to be fair.
In the early 90s, it would have been a lot more affordable.
Early 90s, that would have been probably just 100 grand, I bet. Probably not even that. I reckon about 80 grand for that.
Well, I have no idea. But if that's true, then...
Well, a three-bedroom house in 1998 would have been about 80 grand.
Well, shit.
So, 1991, it was probably free. yeah, so they're like, fine, we'll fucking take you to the fucking zoo, you ungrateful little shit. And he's like, I've never asked for anything ever. They're like, well, you asked for something now.
I mean, he doesn't even ask, really.
No, he's just excited that he's even included in anything.
Yeah.
Like, wow, I get to go to the zoo. I don't even know what a zoo is. I've never seen animals.
I mean, how would he have?
He wouldn't have.
I mean, how would he have seen animals? Like, on the TV, maybe?
I guess so. David Attenborough was, like, as he is now.
Does Harry... Do you think Harry ever, like, just sort of sits with them in the living room while they're watching TV?
I would love to think he does. I bet that they let him sit in the hallway and watch TV through the glass in the door.
As long as he doesn't talk or ask any questions.
Yeah, talk, breathe...
Yeah.
Or masturbate. Maybe that's why they hate him so much. He just keeps on whipping it out at inappropriate times. I mean, like a Christmas dinner and he's like... They're like, Harry!
Back to the cupboard.
Back to the cupboard you go. We don't touch things here. Like, but you touched me last night.
I mean, he's going to have to do a lot of that in that cupboard, isn't he? What else is he going to do? Like, how many... Do you do that by age 11?
I don't know. I reckon he would have just... I reckon he discovered it when he went to Hogwarts, to be fair.
Sharing a room with all those other boys.
Yeah, mean all that testosterone and stuff in the air. You know, finally having, like, a bed that you can spread out in.
Yeah.
You know.
Here's Neville doing it.
Neville doing it across the way. Here's those little whimpers. Here's the crying afterwards.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they go to the zoo. They pick up one of Dudley's friends, Piers Polkiss.
Yes.
Yeah, who you just know as a total twat.
Yeah.
His name is Piers Polkiss. I've never met a Piers that I liked. If your name's Piers and you listen to this, stop right now.
Gifton doesn't like you.
I don't like you or your right-wing family. Yeah, so they go to the zoo, as you do. You wouldn't just stop outside, would you? What a waste of a day. And this is so shitty. So they buy Dudley and Piers an ice cream. And before anyone can say anything, the guy asks Harry what he wants.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, oh, I want this one. And so they have to buy it for him.
They get him a cheap lemon ice lolly because the guy asked Harry what he wanted before they could take him away.
Like, guys, just like give him a fucking ice cream. Like, for come real. On. Okay, so they go into the reptile house and there's a boa constrictor from Brazil in one of the things.
Yeah.
And Dudley and his friend are banging on the glass being total cunts.
Well, they push Harry out the way.
Oh yeah.
So Harry's looking at it, and Harry has a little chat with it.
Yeah, he doesn't think that's weird at all.
No.
He's like, wow, you talk? And the snake's like, yes.
Well, that's not exactly how it goes. Harry says things to it, and the snake responds with, like, nods of its head and stuff. And then it says, Harry asks, I can't remember if this is exactly right, but maybe ask something about like what it's like in Brazil. And the snake.
Ah, I can't remember. Ay, ay, ay.
I'm actually Mexican.
I'm actually Mexican. You may know my cousin. He's a very fast mouse.
But he nods his head towards a sign that says bred in captivity.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, you poor son of a bitch. So they see that the snake is moving at last. And so Dudley and his friend come back.
Push Harry out the way. And then the glass suddenly disappears.
Like magic.
Yeah. And Snake slithers out and says, thanks, amigo, to Harry as he's going out.
Yeah, so Dudley falls through the glass and then the glass reappears. Then he can't get out again. Or maybe that's only in the film.
No, that doesn't happen.
Oh, okay. That's in the movie, guys. Watch the film. It does happen in the movie, yeah, because Dudley's like, ah! And then Petunia's like, Dudley! And then everyone's freaking out.
Well, I do not remember that, but I think I've only ever seen the first film once.
Yeah, it's terrible.
It is terrible.
So, that doesn't go down well.
The glass disappears, Snake slinks off, and they take Harry. The day at the zoo is over, they go home. Vernon throws Harry back in the cupboard and says, stay in the cupboard, no food, and is horrendously angry. And
so the next day is the next chapter, right?
Yeah, letters from no one.
Yeah, so a strange letter comes through the post. Yes. And
there's like, the post is here, and Vernon says, go and get the post, Dudley. Dudley says, make Harry get it.
I see.
Harry says, go get the post, Harry. Harry says, make Dudley get it. And then Vernon says, hit him with your smelting stick, Dudley. So Dudley's going off to the school that Vernon went to, smeltings, and there Vernon's all proud and everything. And Harry's going to a comprehensive school. And Dudley's teasing him about it, saying they flush people down there. They flush people's heads down the toilet at the school Harry's going to. And Harry has a clever little quip back at Dudley. And I just think, like, how is Harry capable of that? He's like, I mean, how has he got such a, like, a sharp, like, wit, like, to make a little jibe like that about Dudley's head being uglier than the thing the toilet's ever seen?
I mean, maybe he, when he stays up late at night watching stuff, he watches, like, American sitcoms.
Or, like, panel shows.
Yeah, so he's like,
Watching Have I Got News For You? Was that a thing in 1991?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Stuff like that.
So, yeah, so maybe that's like shaped and informed his sense of humour.
Yeah. But then even so, the fact that he feels like he can just quip Dudley like that in this house, in this environment, and given that
he's so broken that he's got nothing left to lose.
Maybe, but then wouldn't he just be despondent?
I feel like you either go one of two ways, maybe. Because although they're awful to him, they're not physically abusive, as far as we know.
No.
So I think knowing that there's that line means that he doesn't have as much fear as maybe like a child in a normal abusive situation does.
Yeah, maybe.
Also, maybe if she wrote him as downtrodden as he should be, it would be too much.
It wouldn't be. Know? It wouldn't be a fun kids book.
Yeah,
it would be awful.
Yeah, because then when he got to Hogwarts, because it would take time for him to even try and slightly normalize. So he would be like a much worse version of Neville when he first got to Hogwarts even.
Yeah, he would need like special help from staff at Hogwarts to be fully ingratiated into the social atmosphere there. Especially given that he's like super famous as well.
Exactly, he would need like...
But he's actually like when he first meets Ron, he's super normal. Like they get on and he just talks to him like as, you know, like a normal kid would.
Yeah, which is weird because if you've not had a lot of social interaction, you would struggle to be normal, I reckon.
Yeah.
Like you just would. So yeah, so Harry comes in with a bunch of letters. I mean, he's like, oh, there's one here for me.
Yeah, Vernon's opening the post and then he sees Harry who's looking all excited. No, Dudley goes, Harry's got something. Vernon snatches it off him, panics. His face turns from red to green like a set of traffic lights.
Does that ever actually happen in real life?
That in books all the fucking time. People read people's emotions by what color their face turns. Yeah. And I'm like, that's not the way faces work.
Yeah, I've never seen, like, people get paler or redder.
Yeah, some people get like flushed.
Yeah, that's it.
But like, yeah, like,
I've never seen someone go green.
Yeah, someone, like, people go like his face turned white or his face went like gray with shock. It's like, what?
Yeah, no, it didn't. He just looked more morose than usual.
Yeah.
You and your poetic nonsense. So, and does Harry grab the letter to read it? Or he tries to grab it, I think. Or he does, and then he runs away.
Well, Vernon banishes Dudley and Harry out the room. Dudley and Harry have a little fight, so he was going to listen at the underneath the door. Dudley wins, and they hear Vernon and Petunia talking about what they're going to do.
Yeah. So Harry is not aware of the contents of the letter at this point.
No. He doesn't become aware of the contents until Hagrid gives it to him in the hut. Straight after this, Vernon comes and speaks to Harry and says...
That's it, because the letter is addressed to Harry Potter, the cupboard under the stairs.
Exactly, was addressed to the cupboard under the stairs. And so they realise, shit, someone knows we're keeping him in the cupboard under the stairs.
Social services has realised, damn.
Yeah, so we need to get him out because obviously this is a fucking awful thing we're doing to this child. So they give him Dudley's second bedroom, which should have always been Harry's bedroom, but they're real. Just that horrible. Dudley kicks up a fuss about it, but whatever. And then another letter comes the next day to say, addressed to the second bedroom. And so that's when Vernon starts getting all paranoid because it's like they're watching us, they're watching the house. Which, I mean, they clearly fucking are.
Yeah, they must be, right? This whole bit is kind of weird, because, like, how do they know that he's not read the letter? Like, is there a spell on the letter? Is there...
Well, I mean, there must be. It's one of those things, isn't it, that it's, like, it's magic. It just... Explanation done.
Yeah, kind of thing. It just... You would think, right, that, like, an emissary would have taken that letter personally to the house to sit down with everyone, just in case... Because he is living with muggles, after all. The next morning, after that happens, Harry tries to sneak downstairs before the post comes and accidentally treads on Vernon, who's been sleeping by the front door because he wants to get the post as soon as it arrives. And then the same thing happens again. It's labelled to Harry. And so Vernon tries to, like, nail up the letterbox so no letters can get through, right?
He nails up all the... Yeah, he completely nails up the letterbox and the door. So no one can get in or out. And then the next day, 24 letters make their way into the house inside the 24 eggs that a very confused milkman passed through the window.
That is so beyond ridiculous.
Sorry, what? Inside eggs?
Yeah.
I have so many questions.
It's another, like, JK quirk. Yeah. You know, to have been like, oh, okay, so then what, you know, it's another, a bunch
it's,
of eggs.
It's another lol JK.
Yeah, like, why, first of all, why would you put them in eggs? Why would Harry be the one to even touch the eggs?
Yeah.
You would put it in things that Harry would be sure to get, which is nothing, really. Yeah. But, like, you, this is why you would just send someone round to hand deliver. Just,
yeah. Especially after he hasn't received... Going to such extreme lengths, sending 24 letters inside 24. Just fucking send someone.
Fucking send Hagrid now, you silly bastard. Ugh.
Yeah, to be fair, all this rambling, they do send an emissary in the end.
Yeah, like after a fucking like week of this.
Yeah, once it's got to its absolute extreme.
Yeah. So like, yeah, like a ton of letters. I can't remember if the like chimney eruption happens in the book.
It does.
Okay.
As does Harry jumping into the air to try and grab one and not just taking one off the floor.
Yeah, literally. Like,
that's like a famous internet thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it looks pretty on camera, but a smart person would just run to the other side of the room where the letters have obviously scattered, pick one up from there because everyone else is in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And then dashed into the bathroom, read it, and then probably been like, what? Because he has no idea what.
Yeah, and then
means.
Probably been like, oh, it's a fucking hoax.
Yeah, oh, just another thing to ruin my day.
Yeah, someone playing a joke on me. Yeah. As if my life isn't tragic enough.
To be fair, that's exactly what Bursley should have said. Like, haha,
yeah.
It's a joke. And Harry would have been like, oh. And that literally would have been the end of that until we didn't show up for school.
I feel like whatever spell is informing Hogwarts that Harry's not receiving his letters would still have kicked in.
I mean, if there's a spell informing them of that, there should have been a spell informing them that he's being maltreated and needs help.
Yeah.
And there wasn't. In fact, you know what? Arabella Fig, who is the lady who couldn't look after Harry and Harry that day, she's actually like a watchman for Harry that Dumbledore has employed. So she actually has been telling Dumbledore exactly what's been happening with Harry.
Yeah. And even when he goes around to her place once a year or twice a year or whatever, she makes it fucking miserable.
Mm.
And it's ostensibly because she has to make it miserable because it would be suspicious if, like, he wanted to go back there every time or something. But that's such bullshit.
She could have just said, Harry, don't tell your aunt and uncle what happens when you're here, right? So, yeah, Dumbledore just obviously didn't care enough. He could have sent Harry, like, a bit of chocolate every week just so Harry knew he had a secret friend.
Yeah. He could have done something more than just fully leaving Harry. Because I refuse to believe that Dumbledore doesn't know exactly what's happening in the Dursleys' house. He knows everything.
Mrs. Fig could have taken him to Thorpe Park once a year, you know?
Yeah.
Thorpe Park back then, though, was proper shit. I do remember that because it was like, it was a water park still and it had like the most baby rides you can imagine. It was terrible.
So, also, yeah. I feel like that's still a pretty tragic day out.
With Mrs. Fig.
Yeah. Just by himself. You want to go on the roller coaster?
Yeah, I can't go on yourself because my sciatica is playing up. Yeah, so go on. Yeah, get in the single rider line, which there wasn't one back then. Oh, an awful day out.
Yeah, she probably shouldn't have done that. Although, to be fair, given Harry's experience at nice days out, he probably would have loved it.
I mean, probably, actually. And he's probably got imaginary friends.
Yeah, I mean, he must have.
Yeah, that tell him to do bad things.
He was grateful enough to be at the zoo with a cheap lemon ice lolly surrounded by people who hate him.
Yeah. If that ain't mental fortitude, I don't know what is. Right?
I know, right? He is fucking resilient. Say what you will about Harry Potter, but my God, that boy can take some shit.
Yeah, for real. So yeah, basically Vernon's like, okay, so we're gonna take a little trip. And he packs all the family up and takes them on like a little car ride out into the country, basically.
Yeah, buys a long, thin package. Wonder what's in the long, thin package.
Yeah, it turns out it's a hunting rifle. Spoilers. It's a hunting rifle and Harry is the last Horcrux. Okay.
Snape kills Dumbledore.
Yeah, because they go to a hotel first, don't they?
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then the concierge comes up to their table while they're having like a meal and is like, we've got a load of these letters for you at front desk.
Is one of you Mr. H. Potter? We've got about 100 of these down at reception.
I mean, if you got 100 of them, you'd be like, what the fuck? You wouldn't be casually strolling to the table.
I mean, he probably was a bit, you know.
Like, yeah, we've got 100 of these. Why?
Yeah. What? Who are you?
Yeah, who are you? So then after that, fucking Vernon goes and rents a little paddle boat.
Yeah, takes them over to a little shack on a rock.
Shack on a rock.
A little shack on a rock.
My trivia that I remembered that I'd written down was that the original plot was going to be that Hermione and her dad were going to be fishing and they were going to see the shack on them going to the shack on the rock.
Yeah, and my question was why?
I mean, it's another JKQ.
I'm not going to get too wound up about stuff that isn't in the book. about stuff that didn't make it into the story.
About sensible choices she made
yeah.
to exclude.
But that would have been so fucking convoluted, it makes no sense whatsoever.
I mean, Hermione would have obviously been from that town or village or whatever. And then she would have seen Harry and be like, oh my god, I saw you going to that rock.
But what would have been gained from that, plot-wise?
I mean, maybe he met her first at the station and they became friends that way.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, in the spirit of not getting wound up about things that didn't make it into the book.
On the spirit of not hating this book and everything it stands for, let's carry on. So they get to the Shack on the Rock and they get inside, they cozy up for the night. Harry's forced to sleep on the hearth.
I've always said hearth.
Oh my god, really? Am I saying it wrong? Am I doing a Stephen Fry and saying it wrong?
I mean, thinking about it now, I might be saying it wrong, but I've always said hearth, as in heart.
I mean, maybe both are correct.
Maybe. Let's not look it up. Anytime that word comes up for the rest of the series, you say hearth, I'll say hearth.
Yeah, let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, nice. That took me a second.
So, yeah, it turns out that that day was the day before Harry's birthday. So it turns midnight and Harry draws a cake for himself in the sand / dirt. In the film, and I'm assuming that's exactly what I think he does, because he goes in the book, he sings happy birthday. Let's not sing the tune because we can get sued. He goes happy birthday to
who owns happy birthday?
Oh, there's these, it's a pair of women who might be sisters or lesbian lovers or maybe just friends, but they own the melody for happy birthday. So that's why they usually sing for He's a Jolly Good Fellow in films and TV, because they don't have to pay for that.
Well, there you go.
So we're educational as well as funny.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I mean, I'm tempted to, you know, verify that.
Why does no one believe me when I say things? It's true.
It's not just you. I just like to verify anything. No, literally, before...
Do you know, the amount of times I'll like, whip out, and this happens around other people who we're friends with as well, I'll whip out a word that someone hasn't heard, and they'll have to fucking Google it to make sure I haven't just made it up. Anyway, so Harry Potter sings happy birthday to himself.
Are you sure? Because I think I want to verify that.
Harry Potter sings for He's a Jolly Good Fellow to himself. And literally on the stroke of midnight, like seconds after he says this, there's a big bang at the door.
Yes, which takes us into chapter 4.
Yeah.
Keeper of the Keys.
Which is a ridiculous title.
It is, because, we discuss it in later episodes.
Yeah.
There aren't any keys at Hogwarts.
Yeah, you just fucking say Alohomora and everything happens that you want it to.
Yeah. Or if you do need a key, it's some sort of magical non-muggle key that Hagrid probably can't even use.
Exactly. So yeah, Hagrid is the guy who's banging on the door. He bangs it off its hinges, basically.
He barrels
into the room like he always barrels into every fucking room.
Sorry about that. One of the few lines from the film I remember. Probably because it's on a trailer or something.
Yeah, maybe. Robbie Coltrane does portray him excellently, I will say that.
Yeah.
So now he got nominated for a BAFTA for that.
Did he?
Yeah.
Fair play.
Yeah, actually, I think it's quite well deserved. I think Snape should have got nominated for awards for his portrayal in the last film.
I mean, Snape will never not be Alan Rickman. Yeah. It is just perfect.
Yeah.
Like, the oily voice.
He will never not be Alan Rickman.
Little treat for you there.
A little Toblerone for you there.
That was Gifton doing his impression, by the way. We didn't just like sample that.
Oh my god, imagine if they were like, fuck me, have they got the money to pay for that? I'm like, no, that was just my impression.
Have we got the money to reanimate Alan Rickman's corpse?
Basically, it's sort of like, cut a long story short, Hagrid sort of says, I've come here because you've not been getting your letters or something.
I knew you hadn't been getting your letters, but I didn't know you didn't know anything about anything.
Yeah, because basically it turns out that like Hagrid thinks that Harry knows exactly who he is and who his parents were and what the letters are for.
Yeah.
He doesn't know anything about anything because he's not been told anything.
Well, hang on. I know, you know, maths and stuff.
I thought that was quite a cool line because it's like, that is what you would say, like, no, I do know some stuff. I'm not an idiot. I know maths and things. Unlike anyone else who's about to attend Hogwarts.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I mean, what does Ginny... Does Ginny just, like, stay at home?
I don't want to talk about Ginny, all right?
Is that because you wanted to marry Harry?
Oh, God. I can't think of anything worse than marrying any of the characters in this book. Like, honestly. Yeah. And so Hagrid's so fucking taken aback by Harry's total ignorance of anything wizarding. And I just kept to thinking, what did you fucking expect? No one came to visit him. No one came to see, like, personally, if he was okay. So how did you, what did you think was going to happen? Minerva told you that these are the worst kinds of muggles.
Yeah, if Hagrid thought that Harry knew exactly who he was and what was going on, then as far as Hagrid knows, he would have been okay to, like, visit? Or maybe Dumbledore probably told him not to.
I mean, Dumbledore, I guess, had reason to. Because I was thinking about this, that I guess the reason why you left them, especially with the Dursleys, is because, as we come to later find out, just because Voldemort was gone, it doesn't mean his followers weren't still angry about it or trying to sort of carry out his mission, you know?
Yeah.
And so maybe Harry was in danger from that aspect, which, especially at that time before what happened to the Longbottoms happened, was a legitimate concern. So he wasn't wrong in that respect. Mm. But, you know, it's just a bit like, it's really unfair. So Hagrid says the famous line, "You're a wizard, Harry."
Yeah, except in the books, it's, "Harry, you're a wizard."
And Harry's like, "I'm a what? I'm a what?" And then he's like, "Well, what did you expect with, like, your parents being who they are?" And he's like, "Well, my parents are wizards too."
Mm.
And that, like, fucking is what, like, does Hagrid in. He's like, "You ain't fucking told him about..." He doesn't swear. "You ain't told him about James and Lily and who his parents are and that kind of stuff. Oh, didn't you know he's going to be a wizard or something like that?" And then Petunia fucking was like, "Well, of course I fucking knew."
She doesn't swear either.
She doesn't swear, but I like a sweary of a Petunia.
Yeah, well, I quite like just paraphrasing the whole book and just adding fucks in there every now and then.
It's like, of course I knew it was going to be one of them.
Yeah.
I mean, what, with both of his parents? They were freaks. Harry's, like, mind blown that she's been keeping it from him this whole time. And then Hagrid says something like, "Ever since your parents died at the hands of you-know-who." And then Harry's like, "Well, I thought they died in a car accident." He's like, "You didn't tell them about how they fucking died. Do you think a car accident would have done in Lily and James Potter?" And I remember thinking, look, a car accident could do in anyone. You wouldn't have your wand, like, ready in case a car accident happens just because you was in a car.
No, but they probably wouldn't have been in a car.
I reckon they would have, because Lily was a muggle after all. They did live in a muggle town.
Well, not once they were in Godric's Hollow.
Godric's Hollow wasn't a wizarding village at that point.
Wasn't it?
No, it used to be, but not anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, so Hagrid basically tells him that his parents were killed by a dark wizard and that he was almost killed too, but the curse didn't work.
Hagrid kind of tells Harry his whole backstory at this point, which I think we can pretty safely assume everyone listening knows, so let's probably not go over it. I'm more interested in what Hagrid's got in his pockets.
Oh my God.
I mean, he pulls Harry a birthday cake out, which he is sat on.
That really upsets me. It really fucking upsets me. I have a real thing about cakes getting destroyed in, like, films and TV and stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that Hagrid fucking sat on Harry's cake and then still presented it to him like it was a treat. I was just like, this poor boy has probably never had birthday cake in his life. And the one time he does, you fucking sit on it, you oaf.
At least he made him a cake.
That's even worse. He made it. It's not even a store-bought cake. He gave him a homemade cake that he sat on. That's the kind of thing that I'd be like, look, do you just want to fucking go home? I don't want you at my birthday party anymore.
So ungrateful.
Yeah. I'd rather have no cake than a sat-on homemade one. So you can fuck off, mate.
Oh, wow. Oh, such venom. I just wrote down Hagrid's ass cake. Oh, Harry rummages around in Hagrid's pockets a little more at the start of chapter 5. And we find out how much of an absolute fucking heathen Hagrid actually is.
Yeah.
The shit he has in his pockets.
It is cold in the shack. And so Hagrid starts a fire using his umbrella. And Hagrid's like, "Cool, don't tell anyone about that. I'm not supposed to do magic." I remember thinking that this is kind of weird because basically Hagrid got expelled in book two you find out he got expelled from Hogwarts when he was younger, and so they snapped his wand, but he kept the shards of his wand, and that's what's in Hagrid's pink umbrella. And I always thought it's weird that you get your wand snapped when you get chucked out of school.
Yeah.
Like, why would you not be allowed to do magic just because you got chucked out of school?
And yeah, it's like you've been expelled from school and we're now going to deny you any way of furthering your education.
Yeah. And it's like, that seems massively unfair.
Yeah.
And also, why wouldn't you just sort of like go about getting your own one? I mean, there are other wand makers. Even if Ollivander's been warned, he could have gone to another country.
So it's not like the wand belongs to Hogwarts.
That's so true, yeah.
It's the wizard's property. They bought it.
Really? Dumbledore could have fixed Hagrid's wand.
Do you think?
Yeah.
I don't know that there's like any way you can fix a broken wand, is there?
Have you not read Book 7?
Yes.
He explains a lot of things to Harry, and Harry pretty much just says, okay, cool. And it makes total sense, because if Harry was just a normally brought up kid, the normal kid would be like, what? This is insane. But Hagrid's life has been so shit.
You mean Harry's life?
Whose life, say?
Hagrid's life.
I mean, Hagrid's life's been shit too.
Yeah.
So I'm not wrong. Anyway, Harry's life has been so shit that when this information is revealed to him, he readily accepts it.
I mean, he's a bit incredulous. He does say...
I think
you've got the wrong person. I can't be a wizard.
Yeah, he's not incredulous that it's real. He's incredulous that it's him. Because he's so used to not being the boy that anything good ever happens to.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I thought that was quite nice that... Because if your life was that shit and someone told you, no, actually your life is this magic thing, you'd be like, oh my, you'd like be so willing to jump on board with that.
Yeah, I guess so.
I reckon it took Hermione a little while longer to accept it.
Yeah.
She's probably like, I'm not a wizard, that's not real. And then the guy like unfrizzed her hair and she's like, oh my God,
yeah,
I'm sold. Where's my wand? Where's my packed lunch? Yeah, so basically Dudley fucking sneaks down and starts eating Harry's birthday cake. Which is like, you would at least wait until everyone was asleep to do that. Do you know what I mean?
I think that's a film thing.
Oh, is it? No, that's why he gives Dudley the pig's tail.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think, isn't that just the Dursleys being dicks and shouting at him and pointing a gun at him? I don't remember Dudley eating the birthday cake in the book, but...
And maybe. Either way, okay, so like he gives Dudley a pig's tail for some reason that we are not too sure of.
Yeah, he tried to turn him into a pig, but apparently he was too much like a pig already, so he just gave him a tail.
Can you imagine if he had succeeded in turning him into a pig?
Because he doesn't fucking undo it.
Yeah, exactly. Shit, son. So yeah, that's sort of like a big thing, and then the Dursleys like just run upstairs, and we don't see them again until the end of the book.
Upstairs?
Yeah.
There isn't an upstairs.
They run upstairs in the shack.
Do they?
Yeah, because Harry and Hagrid sleep downstairs by the fire.
Okay.
Why Hagrid couldn't have magicked them up a bed as well?
Well, can you just make a bed appear? Can Hagrid just make a bed appear? That sounds like some pretty heavy duty shit.
I mean, like, other wizards make chairs appear.
Yeah, but I feel like, you know, conjuring accurate furniture is probably quite advanced. So that's basically the end of the chapter, I think.
Yes, and the end of this entire podcast, because we won't be doing this again. so that is the end of the chapter, and that's the end of this episode. Although there's a lot of, like, ugh, things, I think it's quite a solid start to a book, because it moves quite... It's got a very good pace.
It does. It does set up a lot of mystery in the beginning, mm-hmm. and it does, you know, it presents a lot of questions and makes a lot of promises about the mystical nature of what's really going on, and then it does deliver on it pretty well by, you know, saying that the main character is a wizard who's going to go off to magic school and live in this magical world, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I do think the first chapter, I think, is quite nice in sort of laying enough of a groundwork that sort of things that happen are more readily accepted even by the reader, because you sort of have a little bit of a history as to why Harry's even at the Dursleys and what exactly happened to Harry and his parents.
Yeah.
And that wizards are kind of like all over the country kind of thing. I think it sort of gives you enough of a base to start to like jump off from. That the chapters that follow it, they're much easier to digest because you're not just experiencing everything straight away from Harry's point of view and having to learn about everything fresh.
Yeah, you do have an idea that there is a larger wizarding society happening, even if you don't know very much about it, but you know that it is there.
Yeah, so please subscribe. We want that. Rate and review us on iTunes. You can follow us on Instagram at PaulieRedPod, follow us on Twitter at PaulieRedPod, or email us at PaulieRed@gmail.com. So, I've been Gifton.
And I've been Tom.
And this has been Paulie Red. Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye.